Kia ora and welcome to the Power Up podcast, powered by Te Puna Umanga, Venture Taranaki and produced by Raw Collective. We're back to celebrate the success of even more remarkable Taranaki entrepreneurs by highlighting their stories and showcasing the best of work and play in this exceptional region. Across six new episodes, you'll hear honest, practical stories from founders who've built businesses with heart. From global soil pioneers and iconic coffee to hospitality powerhouses, we've sought out entrepreneurs from our region that we know budding business people will learn a lot from. Together, we'll explore how this remarkable region, its landscape, its community, and its spirit continues to power people forward. I'm your host, David Downs, and this is a series about what it really means to build something great in Taranaki, where innovation and big ideas thrive. No mai, haere mai, welcome to Power Up. Today, my guest is Brooke Lean, the founder of The Virtue, a celebrated New Zealand fragrance house born right here in Taranaki that's making waves around the world. Brooke's journey began behind a camera as a wedding photographer before she followed her instincts into the world of scent, creating fragrances that capture emotion and place in a bottle. What started as a deeply personal creative project has grown into a celebrated New Zealand brand, loved for its craftsmanship and connection to place. The Virtue is now stocked in Boots in the UK and most recently saw the launch of its new fragrance, Seakeeper, showcased at the prestigious Monaco Yacht Show. Brooke's story is one of vision and persistence, a balance of art and entrepreneurship rooted in a sense of place and purpose. We'll talk about how The Virtue came to life, what it takes to scale creativity in a global brand, and how Taranaki continues to shape her work and her worldview. So, Brooke, welcome.
Hi.
Now, you've worn many hats. You've been a photographer. You've been an artist. Now you're a fragrance, a founder of a fragrance. What's the thread that ties all these things together?
I think the most common thread is memory and trying to capture those memories and find a way to hold on to them. Memory and emotion, I'd say.
Yeah, because fragrance is very emotive, isn't it, of memory?
It is. It is.
Well, another thing potentially is that it's roles where you can work for yourself. Is that part of it?
True story, yeah. I have only ever really worked for myself. I'm unemployable, I joke.
Are you a good boss?
I'd hope to be a good boss. Yeah. I think I'm a understanding boss because I'm far from perfect in terms of how I roll in for work and the hours that I keep and how I operate. So I sort of have quite a casual relationship with the people who do work for me, but they work incredibly hard.
Yeah.
They want to work for me, which is wonderful.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
So let's go back a bit and talk about those sort of early stages of your career, perhaps that, you know, we just linked earlier that we worked together. You were a photographer at an event that I've been at. So you started off in that sort of creative photography space. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I studied photography originally back in the 2000s, so I'm getting on now. So the main thing with photography is that you're trying to, you know, create emotion or create a mood or capture what is happening and show it in a singular image. So the link between that and the perfumery, it's, for me, it was very simple because when I see an image or I remember a scene, I remember the scent. And I think the more I speak to people, the more people do recognize that in themselves. It's not an innate skill of just me. I have a heightened sense of smell, which I've always had, but it never really had a purpose or a use. My family used to joke my only, you know, skill was to sniff out where the cat had peed on the carpet. But yeah, I've always been really affected and interested by scent, but now it just has somewhere to go.
Now it's your job.
Now it's my job, yeah.
Cat pee on the carpet is not one of the Verve's, not one of your Virtue's brands, is it? No.
Not yet, but, you know, maybe it could be.
It's quite evocative.
It is. We all know it. Mm. Maybe it will sell.
To weird people.
Yeah, there's a lot of weird people out there.
Yeah. So tell us, so that was beautiful. That's a beautiful linking. How do you become a manufacturer or a creator of fragrances? Do you just sort of sit around one day and start mixing potions?
Oh, well, that's how it did start in the beginning, to be honest. It's been quite a journey and I've had lots of different ways in which I thought I may create scent. So I travelled to Cuba in 2016. Wow. And while I was on there.
What did it smell like?
Oh,
Cigars.
Cigars, rum, cigarettes, smoke, sweetness, heat, all of the good things, sweat. It was just the most sort of sensorially evocative place that I've ever been to. And the fact that there's no advertising around, you know, it was like stepping back onto a movie scene of another time. Everywhere you looked was just so inspiring. And when I came back from there, I thought I printed the images that I wanted to show, and I thought it doesn't feel enough. Like the way in which I feel when I look at those images ran so much deeper than just a visual. And so I thought, well, why don't I try and create a 4D experience? So it was just purely for an exhibition to start with. So I looked at creating a scent that went along with the exhibition. So we had music, we had food, we had, you know, the images, and then I created some ridiculously bad scents that went along with it. But it did serve the purpose of sort of getting people into a 4D zone of experiencing the images.
Yeah.
And it really got me thinking of, I feel like this concept, this idea really, really has legs. And I didn't know how I was going to do it at that point. So that's 10 years ago now. So, yeah. I mean, yeah, that's how we sort of started it. And I did think I was naive enough to think that I would be clever enough to actually be, I could be a perfumer, surely. I know what needs to, you know.
I've got a good sense of smell.
You don't know what you don't know. So that started that journey. So in terms of it being commercial, it sort of took a little while to get off the ground. And my initial thought was, well, I'd like to make candles, because I was kind of in the business of shooting interiors and my shop for the magazines, and I was in that kind of world as well as weddings. So I was like, okay, am I going to make perfumes to set the scene for people's weddings? Am I going to make that, or am I going to get other people's scents in and get them to run alongside my imagery? But yeah, as it went on, we kind of started to dig a little deeper, and here we are.
Realised that actually this was a thing you could do and turn into a business.
Yeah.
Wow. And it must have been a steep learning curve from going from being quite good at smelling, that's like, you know, 101 level, I've got a good nose, to creating things that smell good. You know, that's two different things.
It is two different things. And so to sort of cut forward a couple of years, I worked hard to try and find and connect with the people around the world that were doing it and doing it really, really well.
Yeah.
That has been and still is the hardest thing, coming from New Zealand and having no credentials or no connections or no kind of foot into a very sort of secretive, closed world of perfumery. Like, who does this? Who makes it for people? How do we do this? And that world is opening up with new businesses and new people, and access is a little bit easier
than it was back then.
In
my mind, perfumeries are like the big French fashion houses, the Estée Lauders and the Chanels, and a very sort of hoity-toity and locked away and upper-class society. And
absolutely, and to access those worlds, you either need a name or you need a father who's been growing lavender since, you know, 1885. And so that has been the biggest challenge, to kind of get a foothold into someone in somewhere that can make it, that is viable, you know. So it's exciting to try and access those worlds. And I think what I figured out is I actually really love the challenge.
Yeah.
I love trying to do things that are kind of impossible or that people aren't doing, or doing things in a different way. And I think that's what keeps my little squirrel mind on task.
Yeah.
You know?
So the perfumes that you've pulled together, the fragrances that you've made at the Virtue, are they selling in New Zealand? Can I go down to the chemist and get some?
Yeah, they are selling in New Zealand. Yeah. We've been very selective on who we choose to partner with in New Zealand. One of the things that I did make a decision on in recent years is that we are a perfumery company. We're not we do sell incense and candles, but you know, first and foremost, we're a perfumery company. So I had to make sure whoever we're aligning with can just sort of showcase our perfumes in that way. The candle market is extremely saturated, particularly in New Zealand, but the perfumery market, there's only a few of us doing it and doing it well, I believe.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
And it's a really like go-ahead business at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I think it's, you know, got the biggest growth in any sort of beauty industry right now, particularly niche fragrance. People are stepping away from that sort of mass market production and going for something that at least feels like it is handmade and niche. So kind of hit it at a really special time.
That's super cool.
Yeah.
And do people ask you for like bespoke perfume sometimes? Like,
every day.
I want something for my wife's anniversary.
Every single day. And that was a decision I made very, very early on. As a photographer, I was a gun for hire, which was wonderful. It served me really, really well. But coming into this business, one of the things I wanted to step away from was being that gun for hire. So my mission was to create something that I loved and then people would buy.
That's right.
Rather than the other way around. I have done collaborations, you know, which I do really enjoy doing, but I also like doing what I want.
Yeah, you make it. Hopefully other people like it.
Yeah,
and
do you
don't
it?
Have to, you're not selling one-on-one, you're selling mass market sort of stuff, or big market.
That's the intention. I think probably down the line, you know, even recently I've seen some really beautiful opportunities that are starting to show themselves to me. But until I sort of have that process and the structure of how I actually make the perfumes, it's only made for making in bulk, and I have to purchase in bulk. So the ability to do that, until I bring that totally back in-house, which I'm starting to do, which we've sort of gone full circle now, is I'm playing a lot more with the scent now that I understand a lot more, and I'm having a lot of fun with that, which has helped keep me interested.
Do you have a favourite sort of note or fragrance or component of an ingredient?
Oh, I love an oud.
An oud? You have to explain what an oud is to me.
Yeah, sure. So it's a bacterial thing from a plant or a tree, an aquilaria tree.
Yep.
And I really got deep into that after traveling to Oman 2 years ago. And I went there to photograph the rose harvest in the Jebel Akbar Mountains to see where rose oil was made and just sort of see a different way in which people come to perfumery. So it was a bit of a reason to get on a plane sometimes, but it had always interested me. But we went and did that. And then after coming back from there, my total palette had shifted and changed. Even my partner, Mark, he was not really into perfume, you know. He was, what's that? Now he is a connoisseur of perfume, and he wears all kinds, and he wears florals after being in the Middle East.
Wow.
Yeah, so the men there don't...
It's not gendered there so
No,
much.
So that really shifted my perspective on...
And going back to the oud, though, that's a particular element that you're now using in your fragrances?
No, I haven't yet, because I was given such a beautiful education on it, I have not been able to master one. So we're yet to bring out that perfume. It's destined for the shelves in April, and it's still not made.
That's good. Put some pressure on yourself.
Oh, God. Yeah. Most oud perfumes, unless you're in the Middle East, don't actually have natural or real oud in them.
Right.
They're an accord, which, you know, is a synthetic combination to make up that oud smell, because it's a lot less volatile and it's a lot cheaper. Even your Tom Fords that are oud based, they don't have any real oud in them. And so I was feeling all virtuous, for want of a better word, and wanting to have real oud in it and wanting it to be, you know,
authentic.
Yeah, I always want it to be authentic. So I've just been sitting on that. Polishing it for a while. Something to look forward to. I'm looking forward to it.
That's cool. But despite the distinct lack of ouds in your current range, they're very successful.
Yeah.
And you've even broken into the UK with Boots.
Yeah.
That's huge. Boots is like huge, you know, retailer in the UK.
I know. It makes my heart rate spike just when you say that. I think the magnitude of doing that has only really just sunk in. Now I've landed back here in the shop and been able to take stock. I mean, since that came about at the beginning of this year, I think I've just been tunnel vision on figuring out how I'm going to do it and how I'm going to pull it off, to be fair, that I hadn't really given it, you know, the thought.
Wow.
Yeah, but it is.
It's how did you get that opportunity in the first place?
I have a really wonderful friend, his name's Christopher Yu, who I met maybe 6 or 7 years ago. He bought perfume off our website, and my beautiful staff member, Sophie, she's across everything. She looked at the name on the order and it had his business name on it. And she said, who's this person from such and such perfumes buying your perfume? And I read his name and I thought, I've read something about you. And I had read a Herald article about this fella years beforehand about all of the wonderful things he was doing in that perfumery world. And so I sent him an email and asked him, how are you enjoying your Backbeach perfume? And he got right back to me and said, oh, I'm actually in New Zealand next week. Would you like to meet up?
Oh,
I'm going to be in Wellington. And I said, oh, I'm going to be in Wellington. And so So I booked a flight down to see him and brought him my perfumes and let him smell them, talked about what we're doing and what we've got going on. And we've just stayed in contact.
So he's a Brit.
No.
Or he's living in the UK or something.
He's a New Zealander, born and bred from Lower Hutt.
Good on him.
But he's made it big in the perfume world over there. He's recently just moved back to New Zealand, so it's exciting to have him here, have an ally and somebody who's been so incredibly helpful.
Yeah.
He's so generous with his time and his knowledge and his insight into things, because it's quite a lonely pursuit, you know. I feel like I've made this business in a vacuum.
Yeah.
And in some ways, it's really cool because I haven't had all of the influences and the pressures to be like anybody else. So in that way, I think the Virtue kind of stands out.
Yeah.
But he's been a wonderful character in kind of introducing me to what's going on in the world. So he came to our new store when we opened it at the end of last year. It must have been really close to Christmas time.
Yeah.
And he sort of said, Brooke, we could take this store and transport it to Paris and it would be perfect.
Stop it.
I was like,
oh. That's a huge compliment.
It was really huge. And he said, what are you doing? You need to find your lane. You need to figure out what it is that you want to do and go and do it. So he suggested that Sophie and I go to Milan in February. It was now December. And I said, yep.
Sure.
Oh, sure, yeah.
You strike me as the sort of person that would just say yes to something like
that.
Well,
yeah, I did. Yeah. I said, oh, yeah, surely. So we closed this shop for a month and Sophie and I flew to Milan. So we went to the Exance. It's spelled so weird, I can never say it. It's a massive niche perfumery expo over there. And there he said, you need to speak to this person and, you know, see where you think the Virtue fits in and into this world. I think you'll be pleasantly surprised. We were overwhelmed and surprised, but we did that. And then he said, okay, cool, great. You've met this person, you've done that. I've got someone who I want to introduce you to. I might have a retailer in London for you. So he goes, this person's details and our little Airbnb in Milan, Sophie and I were overwhelmed. Our bags were lost, so we were wearing the same clothes all week. I got on this Zoom with
At least you smell good, though.
Oh, I smell
you can cover
delightful.
Yourself with your perfume.
Oh, I smelled delightful.
Perfume with a little bit of sweat.
That was the combo, 100%. A lot of sweat and a lot of perfume. And this person was the head buyer for Boots, which I tried to be cool about, but I think it was a Zoom. She could see I was 100% not cool. So that is exactly how that happened, which is extremely fortuitous, and I am so, so grateful.
Yeah.
But potentially the ability to say yes to those things has been the reason why I have ended up there, to just be brave. And
yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's yes, there's definitely serendipity in there, but there's hard work and there's following the opportunities when you see them, instead of just saying, oh, I can't do that, it's too big, too hard.
Yeah, because it's all too big and too hard if you think too much about it, you know. So I think this whole thing has come about due to instinct. I don't have any business credentials or any kind of education, to be fair, on business in general, but I do know when an idea feels good.
Yeah.
And I do have a sort of sense of instinct when it comes to making decisions, and I just try and run on that.
Brilliant. Mm. Seems to be working so far. Because you've also, as if this whole story wasn't enough, you've done some work at the prestigious Monaco yacht show. That's a big event too. I've had a bit of work to do. I've done a bit of work with that. That's enormous.
Yeah, so we soft launched our Seakeeper perfume that I made at the Monaco Boat Show this year.
Yeah. That's not a sentence you thought you'd say probably 10 years ago.
No, absolutely not. And then we did, that's what I was doing in Miami, Florida, last week or the week before, we actually did the official launch at the Fort Lauderdale Boat Show.
Wow.
So, yeah, this is a collaboration between us and the International Sea Keepers Society.
Of course, yes.
Yeah, so our newest perfume, Sea Keeper, is that.
Yeah. But launching it at a boat show, I mean, the theme of Sea Keeper now makes sense, but launching at a boat show is not normally where you'd think of as a it's not like, you know, the Champs-Élysées or whatever in Paris or the Milan, you're now at a boat show.
Yeah.
What was behind that thinking?
Well, it wasn't my thinking. I can't actually take credit for that thinking. However, I was introduced to a man called Lance Shepherd, and he heads up the South Pacific branch of Sea Keeper.
Yeah.
And he came into our store on a different project that I was working with Venture Taranaki, and he was there working for them. And he sort of looked around in my store and was like, feels like you got a kind of ocean vibe rolling in here, Brooke. Like, what's that about? Like, do you make any ocean-inspired perfumes? I said, well, yeah, I do. So we have Back Beach, which is our local perfume, based on that. Well,
I was just going to ask about Back Beach, because clearly there's a Taranaki connection there.
Yeah.
My wife's favourite beach.
Yeah.
I must get a bottle of Back Beach.
You must.
Yes, I must.
Come to the shop, I'll hook you up.
I will.
Yeah,
I will. I'll get some, because Back Beach, does it smell a little bit of like the sea, like the scent of sea, but also of driftwood and maybe a little hint of smoke from the fire from last night. Or
have you been doing your homework?
No, but this is Back Beach is evocative to me because I lived on the West Coast when I was growing up, and there's something about the smell of a West Coast beach that's very different than the East Coast where I live now. Yeah,
true story. You hit the nail on the head your description.
Wow.
Yeah, you did. It's moody, it's salty, it's dark, it's mineral, and it has guacwood and birch tar, which is the driftwood element, wet driftwood.
Maybe I've got a gift in this area.
Maybe you do.
Does it also smell of teenage parties and burnouts?
And debauchery.
Yeah.
Look, let's say yes.
Cool.
Let's say yes.
I definitely want a bottle of that.
If that's what you bring to the table with it, that's the beauty of it. Once I make it, it's my concept. Once you smell it, it's really yours. So those skid marks might be in it for you.
I love it. But anyway, coming back to you, so now you're at the Monaco Boat Show and now Miami.
Yeah.
And you're launching fragrances all over the world from Taranaki.
Yeah.
Jeepers, you're often on planes, you don't know where you are, time zones.
Oh, not so much. It's not that glamorous. But, you know, one of the purposes of starting this business is I love being from Taranaki. I love being from here. I love the lifestyle of living here. But I've always had itchy feet.
Yeah.
And the beauty of traveling, I love seeing new things, smelling new things, meeting new people, connecting with people, learning about other cultures, learning about how other people live.
Yeah.
Because I think we're at the edge of the earth, and I think that's something that I've brought to Sea Keeper and introduced to the world via Sea Keeper, born at the edge of the earth, crafted for the sea.
Yeah.
And the more I sort of think about how it's shaped, I don't know, my world, my personality, I think the fact that we do live so far away from everything, unless you want to live your life with your tunnel vision, blinkers on, we have a responsibility almost to educate ourselves on what else is going on in the world.
Yeah.
And with photography, it was always great. I was always doing that. And it was always kind of my intention when I'm shooting was to connect with people, not just to take something from somebody, not just to shoot something and take something, but it was actually the interaction I would be having in that process. What was I giving in that?
It's sort of an interesting thing in art, isn't there, about are you an observer or a participant in your art as a photographer?
Yeah, totally.
And it's the same with this, as you said, it's just sort of an interactivity between you as the creator and then the wearer and what he or she might interpret.
Yeah. And
we're getting very deep.
Oh, aren't we? Oh, I have a habit. I wish I could not go so deep sometimes, but, you know, it's part of the process, really. But, yeah, that sort of need to do that has shaped the reason for doing this. And, you know, my camera always gave me access to places that, you know, other people couldn't be, which I think was really interesting for me. And then now the perfumer is doing the same.
Is it a challenge to grow a business and do international business from Taranaki?
I'm learning that it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the beginning, no. In the beginning, I think it's a real advantage to be here because you're not in the room with the people you need to be in the room with, you know, the business people, the movers and the shakers. But in some ways, it's kind of great because you get to form your own identity within your business and do it without all the pressure and the hustle of living in the city and trying to keep up and trying to network and try and be with the PR and la, la, la.
Yeah.
Kind of get to live here, live a beautiful life.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's room to create.
Create, yeah.
Yeah.
And go and smell the back beaches and the and the areas that inspire you.
True story.
And then as you grow the business, well, it clearly hasn't stopped you getting these massive opportunities like Boots, like Sea Keepers.
No.
But it's also you've kept a bit of what I think is very cool, a charitable kind of element to it. But the Sea Keepers one in particular. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, so $50 from every bottle actually goes back to the International Sea Keepers, the South Pacific branch particularly, which so far I think we've managed to donate over $10,000 to them, which we will actually get to see where that money goes to their floating classrooms and their other initiatives, which is really exciting.
Yeah.
And I think it's just a feel-good factor. I've always wanted to incorporate a charitable give back into the business, not just as a, you know, what's the word for that?
Yeah, tokenism.
Tokenism.
Yeah.
But it's something that I was really passionate about in the ocean. It's something that I am really passionate about. So it was just an easy yes for that one. Like, yeah, of course. That sounds fun.
It also sounds like hard work. It sounds like you work really hard. You strike me as a person who really gets into something.
Yeah.
And you spend a lot of time. You mentioned it earlier that you work strange hours.
Yeah, I do. I become obsessed with things, and that's something that I'm learning to accept about myself.
Yep.
You know, that once I get an idea in my head, I'm like guns blazing. I'm ready to go until I've exhausted myself and all possibilities with it. But that's my gift, I guess. That obsession.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. You got to be careful, I guess, though, to balance working very hard with allowing time for creativity.
Yeah, that's the constant battle. Yeah, dealing with the spreadsheets and the numbers and that kind of hoo-ha, and then stepping into that creative zone. I was doing it before I came here. I was running reports to send to a new buyer in Australia, and I thought, this is so stupid doing this now, because now I've got to come and sit in this room and try and access all of this information. And I don't...
My head's in spreadsheet land, not in focus land.
Yeah, and that's something that I do find continuously difficult. I enlisted the help of Zach from Business Changing, who we met each other through.
That's right.
Because I knew that that was really a weak link for me. I had no idea of how to run a business. I, you know, run as a freelance photographer, but, you know, that's contractual. You have your busy times and you do it and then you go full on and then you rest and you stop.
Yeah.
Something that I've had to learn that this is never stopping. Like, it just doesn't stop. It's a little beast that just keeps on sucking the energy.
Taking it out of you.
Yeah. Wow. So I've had to really be quite strict with myself in terms of how I work, and I'm still figuring that out. You know, like, there's been several times, I think all of this year, I've been in a state of absolute burnout.
Yeah.
But I try.
Yeah.
I try.
You can recognise that. That's the first step, I suppose.
Yeah, a bit of self-reflection, figuring out what your flaws are and what your strengths are and trying to work with those, I guess.
Have you had some setbacks along the way?
Oh, yeah, plenty of setbacks. I mean, the one that I would, that comes to mind straight away is during all of this year, my dad passed away in June, and he wasn't involved directly in my business, but he was my biggest sort of cheerleader. And I think that happened in June. So I'll probably have to cut some of this out because I'm like, is that blubbering? But for me, like, working on all of these huge projects and having these deadlines, and those deadlines were sort of conflicting with this. Nice. So that was probably the hardest thing, like getting that mental fortitude together to actually go, well, you know what, this is not the time to drop the ball. And I was lucky enough to be able to speak with him, you know, over the few days that we had. And that was him. He's just like, now it's not the time.
Wow.
You know, you've got to, this is your minute. If you drop the ball now, this is your opportunity. You only get a couple in your life. So come on, baby, you better suck it up.
Sounds amazing.
Yeah. So
yeah.
Trying to navigate that and thinking far out, this all the stuff I'm working towards, and then you're thinking at what cost, you know, like family, time, all the rest of it. But it was really quite cool to go, well, you know what, you did that. Everything else could be pretty easy from here.
You made it through that period, yeah.
Yeah.
That's the thing about it, isn't it? What doesn't kill you makes you stronger.
Makes you stronger. And I've only just sort of been able to take stock, even in the last, you know, 2 or 3 days. So it's all a bit raw. So, yeah, I mean, that's the one that comes to mind. There's been plenty more, but yeah.
It is. I mean, I guess what you're describing is the classic thing that all founders and all business leaders and owners realize after a while is that there isn't business and life. There's life.
Yeah.
And it includes business and it includes all these things and we're humans and all this stuff mixes together.
Yeah. And particularly in my line of work too, you know, it does. It's all encompassing.
Yeah.
So yeah, I try and keep a good sleep schedule. I'm not very good at that either. I was a self-professed like night owl for my whole life, you know, always. My whole family are night owls.
Yeah.
And I decided a few years ago that, you know what, I'm not a night owl anymore. I'm going to get up early in the morning, and I have a crew of girls two girls actually. No one else keeps our schedule, but I surf as many mornings as I can.
Oh, good on you.
And it's the only thing that will get me out of bed early in the morning. No other task, no running, no gym, no yummy breakfast can get me out of bed.
But surfing well.
That's magic. Yeah, so I found that thing. I've always surfed, but it was never an early morning pursuit. And so for me, having that in mind when it's time to go to bed helps me be a little bit more disciplined.
Got to get some sleep.
Because the other girls, they don't seem to have a problem. They are up at Sparrow's Fart and having a great old time. I'm still grumpy as hell, but I'm there.
When you hit the water, though.
Oh, no, it's all good. Just don't talk to me on the way in. I'm not alive nor awake yet. But that's one of the biggest things that has really helped me sort of shift how I operate.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I'm too tired otherwise. But it really helps me during the day. If I've surfed in the morning, you know, all of the things that come at me in the day don't seem to rile me up as much. That sort of adrenaline and the, you know, the feel-good stuff that comes with that. And you've had a chance to have a yarn with the girls, get anything out of your head that was going on the night before. It's kind of therapy as well, you know. My friend Ange says it's our church.
You've answered the question I was going to ask, which is about what is about Taranaki that you love. Clearly, that's one of the things.
It's probably the mainy.
Yeah,
it's my family. I grew up here, so I'm deeply connected. My parents have had huge involvement in the community here, so I've grown up with having people who are not entrepreneurs or business people, but at the same time, they were deeply ingrained into community, and I sort of watched that and watched them do amazing things and watched them give their time really selflessly to things. So that has really shaped my perception of where we live, where we come from, and how important it is to sort of know your roots, I guess.
Yeah. Now, I've heard this phrase, or I read about it on your website,
aromacology. Well, I don't think it's on my website, but okay. I think a magazine editor wrote it and then asked me to speak about it.
So you're the expert.
Because I was the expert, truly. I probably had to Google the term because I've come at this from a non-scientific, non-technical background. But I do know what it means. It's the effect of fragrance or scent on human psychology.
Oh, like psychology and aroma. Oh, like we were talking about earlier,
yeah,
about
yeah.
how they certain scents will just evoke a feeling of a beach or a party. Or
how you felt when you were at that place.
Yeah.
So for me, that was an instinctive thing. I just knew that that's what it did.
Yeah.
But the scientists actually can tell you exactly why. And I think what happens is it's a direct line to your olfactory nerve in your brain when you smell something. And it takes people back to that memory.
Yeah.
And so that's what I mean by it's not just me who has this amazing skill. I had the ability to understand it and perceive it and want to learn more about it and find a language to describe it. But we all have that thing. So that's the beauty of it when you explain it to people and you say, hey, how does that make you feel when you smell that? It's not foreign. People come to me with, in the store, I introduce the perfume and then I just listen to what they bring to the table. And that's kind of the fun thing about it, that once it's in everybody else's hands, I no longer have to sell it. And it's just really fun.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Are you excited about the future for the Virtue?
Excited and like relatively terrified, to be honest, this week as I sort of assess, you know, God, what are we going to do now? How am I going to?
Is it a question of the opportunities that are ahead of you?
Yeah, it is. It is. There's some really exciting opportunities. We're launching into Australia in February next year via the Iconic. That's not a secret. That's that's happening. So
the Virtue and the Iconic, that's two cool brands coming together.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I actually met Joanna Robinson, the marketing manager at Nurture Change.
Here we go.
Yeah, yeah. And we've stayed in contact and that's happening. But yeah, lots of other really exciting things and exciting opportunities that are sort of coming about from having my foot on the ground in Fort Lauderdale and speaking to these really exciting people, really, who have access to some really interesting places and markets, I guess. But it's deciding what I want.
Yeah.
You know, what is it that I want, you know, where do I want this business to go for me and my family? I want to be a creative director of my business. I don't have an urge to be a massive CEO of a huge company that I have no control over.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, those decisions will be coming down the line for me, I guess.
Exciting.
Yeah.
What advice have you got for other creative people who are trying to find their pathway into a business or to, you know, a more stable lifestyle or whatever it might be? You know, you seem to have turned your creative and artistic side into something that's a business side, despite all the spreadsheets.
Yeah, I mean, the words stable and creative together is interesting at best, but I think the thing with it is that you have to have a level of trust and self-belief in what you're doing. To be honest, though, that's one of my weaknesses. As I'm making things, that whole process as a creative and an artist or whatever, that process of making something, it's pure torture. And I just don't think that there's any way of getting around it. I think that is the part of it that makes you work harder to make sure it's really good. And that's the difference between making something that's average and making something that's exceptional. And the level of acceptance you've got to have and the bravery you've got to have to put it out into the world, even though you feel like, oh, dear Lord, is anyone going to like this? But you have to learn to not care so much.
Yeah. It's a torture. Artists are like that, eh? They're tortured and they're, as you say, they're always looking to attain something even greater.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm trying to avoid that, to be honest. I'm trying to learn ways in which I can enjoy that process a lot more, like be kinder to myself and be kinder to the process and just go with it a little bit more, trust it a little bit more. You know, there is proof now that what I'm making is good. Before there wasn't, you know. So I have to listen to that. But yeah, I think trusting your own instincts and knowing that someone will probably like it, so just make it anyway.
Sure. If you could do like a collaboration with any New Zealand artist or or band or brand or place or whatever?
What would you do? Oh, yeah. I've been thinking about this, actually. I have become obsessed with filmmaking of late. I would love to make something with Taika Waititi, and I would love Marlon Williams to make the soundtrack. So I'm just going to put that out into the universe.
Put it out. Come on, universe. Provide. Yeah,
because he's so funny. And then Marlon's style and his sort of emotive way of singing and just really grinds my gears. So, if you're listening. Yeah.
Come on
down.
Last question, or two questions actually. Question in two parts. What's one business decision you're really glad you made? And conversely, what's one that you wish you'd done differently, handled differently?
The best decision I made was when I saw COVID coming, I had, I think, 15 weddings booked as a photographer for the following wedding season. And I looked at what was coming and the circus that was about to unfold. And I quit. I quit being a photographer in that moment. I still did a little bit of commercial work. I still do. That's what has paid for everything, really. So when times get tough, Brooke's back off. You see Brooke with a camera. She's hustling because she needs some cash. But, yes, deciding that I no longer do that as a job anymore. And I gave back all of the deposits that had been paid and just said, Thanks. And it allowed me the space to actually invest my mind into what it was that was going to come next. Because while that wedding industry is in your mind, it is all encompassing.
Yeah.
And it had taken up so much of my brain space for 17 years. And I'm grateful for it because it's how I polished my craft. It's how I became a good photographer. And that connecting with people on that emotional level, that all comes into how I approach perfumery. So I'm not sad that I did it for all of that time, but, yeah, it was a really cool decision and I'm really proud to have been able to just, say, that's it. But sometimes that's it.
That is it. When it's it.
The other one that you asked, can you ask me?
What's something you wish you'd handled differently?
I didn't have a specific for this one because I've made so many terrible mistakes. But one that I think I made was in my quest to gain knowledge and to learn and do that, I think I took on so many opinions.
Other people's opinions
because I believed I needed them and because I don't know what I'm doing. You know, I wanted to learn and I wanted to be really good at this new pathway I was taking. I let other people's opinions have a little bit too much influence on my work and my direction. And so I felt like I was being torn in so many different directions. And so I did make a conscious effort 2 years ago to actually write some of the stuff down and figure out, okay, I no longer have to listen to this noise. I'll ask for help when I need it, and I always do. I have no problems looking stupid, for want of a better word. I'll always ask if I don't know. But, yeah, I had to really sort of look internally and go, well, your instincts got you this far. You need to kind of listen to those again and shut out that external noise a little bit more.
Nice. Trust Brooke.
Ugh, who would?
Oh, you should. It's awesome. Hey, Brooke, it's been fantastic to talk to you. Thank you. And the whole place smells wonderful in here.
Oh, it's God.
Wonderful.
Oh, cool. All right. Thank you so much.
Kia ora.
Kia ora.
Thanks so much for listening. And a special thanks to Venture Taranaki for making this podcast happen. If you're an entrepreneur looking for support, talk to Venture Taranaki. With a network of experts, Venture Taranaki can help with one-on-one startup clinics, mentoring, workshops, business advisory support, and power-up programs. Anything you need to bring your idea to life. Visit the Venture Taranaki website and get in touch for personalized support. And lastly, please rate, review, and subscribe. It helps others find us.